This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up, a look into Herbalife's operations in Connecticut. This multi-level sales company has made big inroads in the Latino community, and it faces criticism for its business model. We will take a closer look. But first, third-party electric suppliers were supposed to be one of the solutions to the state's high energy costs, providing choice and the potential for lower prices for consumers. But in reality, many homeowners are hit with spiking rates and termination fees, forcing state and federal lawmakers to step in. Today, Where We Live, we will take a closer look at this shocking consumer problem. We will take your phone calls as well. Have you had problems with third-party electric suppliers? Have your electric costs gone through the roof? Join us, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can comment on our website, WNPR.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining me in studio is Ellen Katz. She is Connecticut's consumer counsel who oversees these issues, and she's going to be helping us wade through this world. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I appreciate it.
And also on the phone with us is Luther Termel. He's a reporter for the New Haven Register. He's been covering utilities in Connecticut since around 1997, so he's seen this whole changing world. Luther, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, John.
I'm wondering first, Ellen, if you can just describe what we're talking about here. Who are the third-party electric suppliers?
Okay. The third-party electric suppliers are independent companies that can provide energy to consumers and businesses independent of either Connecticut Light and Power or United Illuminating. You have the option of always getting what's called the standard offer, particularly if you're a residential consumer, which is you buy your energy right from your utility. But you also have the choice of going into the market and choosing one of these suppliers.
Luther, you've been covering this for a long time. Maybe you can explain how we ended up with the system that we have.
Well, back in 1998, the legislature passed the deregulation of Connecticut's electric business. And in 2000, the market opened up to these third-party suppliers. Now, it didn't develop as quickly as some people would have liked, but over the past couple of years, it's really become highly competitive, and I think that's part of the reason for some of what we're seeing is that you've got multiple players in the market, multiple third-party suppliers who are competing for your business. Now, that should be a good thing, but there are probably some bad actors out there as well.
Ellen, when he talks about multiple third-party suppliers, how many are we talking about here?
Oh, there's over, I think, 40 or 50 in the market in Connecticut.
Over 40 or 50. And how do you, in your role, keep track of all of them?
Well, we look at the companies who post on the state's website, which tells you what the energy prices are, and you can compare to the standard offer in your site. That's the Energize CT site. But lately, actually, we've been focusing on those for whom we've gotten complaints, and we've gotten a number, thousands of complaints this year.
Thousands of complaints, and we're going to get into detail on what some of those complaints exactly are and what the state is doing about them. Luther, how do we get to the point where there's 40 or 50 different companies vying for this business? I mean, what's the regulatory process that allows for a company to actually say, yes, we're providing electricity in the state?
Well, for one thing, they have to go through what was, at the time, the Department of Public Utilities Control and is now the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority. That's our utilities regulatory body. And they have to sign off before you can become a certified competitor in the marketplace. But once you've got that certification, I don't know that it's possible for PURA to track all of these companies on a minute by minute or even day by day basis. I mean, I think for some extent they have to rely on the complaints that Ellen talked about.
What are these companies exactly doing, Luther? Are they providing the electricity to the sockets in your house? Are they making the electricity, or are they just sort of the ones who handle the paperwork? Maybe you can describe what benefits or liabilities these various companies bring to the process of getting electricity into your house.
Well, in theory, the benefit is supposed to be that because they don't have the overhead, the costs associated with the big legacy utilities like United Illuminating and CLNP, they're supposed to be able to offer you electricity cheaper, and a fair number of them do. The problem becomes that in competing and also, I guess, in wanting to make a profit, some of them have a tendency to cut corners and do some things that are overly aggressive. I mean, the idea of this law is to change the whole way they do business and to make them fess up, for lack of a better word, if they give you an introductory rate that's going to change after 60 or 90 days. That was one of the complaints. It's really about trying to take into account that electricity is a very complex issue, and a lot of consumers just don't understand it. These folks are not producing the electricity. They're buying it from another provider. So in essence, John, they are middle people.
We're talking with Luther Turmel, who's a reporter for the New Haven Register, who's been covering utilities in the state for a number of years, including the entire era of deregulation, as we call it, that allowed for these third-party electric suppliers. We're also talking with Ellen Katz, who is Connecticut's Consumer Counsel. We're going to take some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. We would love to hear your stories if you've had some experiences with third-party electric suppliers. Maybe we can point you in the right direction today as we talk about some consumer issues. Again, 860-275-7266. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Ellen, some of the things that we may see come through the mail when a third-party supplier is trying to get our business is that perhaps they generate or they purport to get energy from a clean energy source, or that they're getting energy in some way that's outside of the normal energy that you'd get from United Illuminating or Connecticut Light and Power. Can you talk about that? I mean, where does the energy come from that actually comes through this third-party supplier?
Well, I think that's a very important issue to talk about, because for most of the consumers, you can make a choice to buy what is a green product, which has a larger percentage of renewable energy than that which you can get from CL&P. Most consumers in the market who are buying from competitive suppliers are not choosing it to get a green product. So putting that aside, and first of all, keep in mind that both CL&P and UI are required to have 18% renewable energy. So even if you buy the standard offer, you should appreciate that you're supporting clean energy initiatives. But you're not getting anything special in your energy when you get from one supplier versus another. The electrons are the electrons. They're generated at generating plants.
Plants, I just want to make sure that our listeners understand,
sure,
for those who haven't been following as closely as you or Luther have for these last couple decades, this is not power being made by United Illuminating or power being made by CL&P. This is being made by other generating companies that then provide the power through the transmission lines that CL&P has.
Right, yes. So these competitive electric suppliers almost entirely do not own any generation. They're just essentially brokers for the energy. They buy it on the market and sell it to you. But there's nothing special. The electrons you get over your wires are the same whether you get it from CL&P or a competitive electric supplier, United Illuminating.
So if someone sees a flyer that says, look, I would like to get more of my power from solar because I believe strongly in solar, can you have some confidence that indeed this third-party supplier is actually sourcing more of its electricity from a solar or wind or whatever it says it's actually sourcing the power from?
Yes. Actually, one of the issues that we've been concerned about is that some suppliers are selling, quote-unquote, green products that are only a smidge greener, let's say, than the what you can buy from CL&P or UI. So one of the changes in the law is that they have to tell you what percentage of energy you are getting that's from renewable sources above and beyond the 18% that's already required by law.
If you want to join us with questions, 860-275-7266. Jeff is in Prospect. Hi there, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I've been hearing your interesting discussion on this topic, and I just want to bring up the point. The deregulation, I assume, was the goal was to help the consumer. However, what's happened is the transmission rates have crept up and crept up to the point where even if you get a competitive rate, or if you do like my sister did and get solar power for your house, you're still strapped with that monthly bill from CL&P or UI, which is no small amount.
And thank you for that, Jeff. Ellen, you're nodding your head.
Well, yeah, I think it's important for people to understand when you look at your utility bill, it has basically two parts. The part at the top is from the amount of energy that you use and you're charged per kilowatt hour. At the bottom is the distribution rate, which is completely separate than from the energy that you're buying. And so he's speaking to the distribution rate, which is how much everyone pays for the costs associated with keeping the lines and the wires and the poles and the transmission lines functioning.
And that's the amount that goes to your utility provider, CLMP, no matter what. They're the ones who are maintaining the lines, right? And that's the rate that we might see go up if indeed, say, CLMP has a really bad year with storms and they have to recoup some money from consumers in order to rebuild their power infrastructure. That's what Jeff's talking about?
Yes. And in fact, CLMP has a rate case pending right now before Public Utilities Regulatory Authority in which they are proposing a significant hike to that distribution rate.
Before we turn to some of the issues around these third-party electric suppliers and elderly residents of Connecticut, Luther, I'm wondering if you can just flesh out a little bit more. What are some of the concerns we've heard? You and Ellen have already touched on some of them, but what are the consumer questions that have come up that have forced the state to change its laws?
Well, I think one thing that should be made clear is that a lot of this dates back to the beginning of the year when we saw a price spike. I think that was a big factor in people getting upset about this. I mean, people always grumble about electricity in Connecticut. And in fact, back in 2009, when the DPUC still existed, the then commissioner of the DPUC, Kevin Delgado, held a meeting with all the third-party electric suppliers and basically said, I'm the new sheriff in town and you've got to clean up your act. The difference here is that the legislature passed this legislation that requires you on the bills, or will require the electric companies on the bills, to state what their rate is versus what the standard offer is. That's for one thing. I think part of what consumers get frustrated about is that, I mean, in some cases we've had consumers complain to us that these folks are going door to door, and Ellen would be better able to address whether that's allowed under existing laws. But and the other thing is they're just very aggressive, and I think, you know, New Englanders are a reserved folk, and I think that having people call you up and, you know, try and push themselves on you when you may or may not have an interest in it is unsettling to some people, especially older folks.
And we'll get to some of the issues with the representative from AARP Connecticut in just a couple minutes there. But maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, about some of the issues that we've heard about, Ellen.
Yeah, I think I've heard a lot of issues from people who really object to the phone calls during dinner, or senior citizens who are very unnerved by having people knock on their door, people who are home during the day alone, these door-to-door marketing practices. But the biggest complaint by far is from folks who felt that they signed up for a fixed rate. In other words, it's going to be this much every month, and found themselves switched without warning to a variable rate. And then the variable rates themselves, until we passed this law, there was this very bizarre market in which you take the energy and then they tell you after you use it how much you're going to pay for it. It's like going to the store and buying apples, and you eat your apples, and a month later they send you a bill and say, oh, it was $10 a pound for apples. That's just a bizarre market system that was very, very dangerous to consumers.
How did it actually end up that way in the first place? I mean, how could we possibly have allowed this number of suppliers to come into the market with such loose regulations on how they charge consumers?
That's a good question. I think this is a problem that's been evolving. Luther talked about the polar vortex and the prices that shot up this winter. But actually, at the Office of Consumer Counsel, we have argued, because we believe that this has been going on for the last couple years, it's gotten particularly egregious because CLNP and UI have changed the way they buy energy, which has lowered their rates and made them much more competitive. And so, therefore, the competition has just gotten that much fiercer, which I think has led to a lot of these really aggressive marketing practices.
Before we take a break, you mentioned that there are some of these companies that you've gotten more complaints about than others. Can we just name names here so in case people have questions, we know that the Consumer Council is looking at them?
Well, I can tell you we settled fairly recently with Energy Plus for $4.5 million, so that's a pretty good indication. We actually did a press release in January of the top 10 customers, top 10 companies with respect to complaints. I don't have those off the top of my head, but I know some of them are the biggest companies in Connecticut and some of the most powerful as far as having market share, like Public Power and Discount Power and companies. Names you would know.
Luther, can you help us fill out that list at all?
Not right off the top of my head, to be honest with you. In fairness to the companies that are the decent players and haven't violated the rules, I doing it off the top of my head wouldn't be a good thing.
Well, what we'll do is we will find that press release from Ellen Katz's office, and we'll make sure that we tweet that out and put links on our website at WNPR.org. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the impact on elderly Connecticut residents, and we'll also take more of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. I want to thank Luther Turmel, who's a reporter for the New Haven Register, who covers utilities as closely as anyone. Luther, thank you so much for your time and expertise. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, John.
We are going to continue in just a couple minutes. You can also find us at Where We Live on Twitter and Facebook. And again, join us, 860-275-7266. We'd love to hear your questions next. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about some consumer issues in the state, specifically right now electric rates in Connecticut and new consumer protections for customers of so-called third-party electric suppliers. If you've had problems with third-party electric suppliers, you can give us a call because Ellen Katz is here. She's Connecticut's Consumer Counsel. Might have some information for you, 860-275-7266. Very quickly, before our break, I was asking about a list that you may have about some of the actors that you've had to act against in this marketplace. Do you have that list for us now, Ellen?
Yeah, and just to be fair, this is from a press release from January in which we identified 10 companies who were charging more than 17 cents a kilowatt hour, and this is compared to the energy you could buy from CLMP or UI at 9 cents, so significantly more. And the companies in January who were charging that much were Discount Power, Stereon Energy, Choice Energy, Palmco Power, Public Power, Next Era Energy, HOP Hop Energy, Zoom Energy, Blue Pilot Energy, and Perigee Energy. And again, that is from January, and you would want to check the rates before you switch to a supplier, and to be fair to the company, some of them may have changed the rates.
And we're going to take some of your calls in a moment at 860-275-7266. But I want to bring in John Erlinghauser, who's Advocacy Director for AARP Connecticut. This has hit a number of elderly people in the state especially hard. John, welcome to our program.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening through to this conversation so far. Maybe you can pick up on it and tell us what some of the issues that you've been dealing with are.
Well, I think, John, I just wanted to hit a couple of points from earlier that Luther made and Alan kind of touched on, which was, when we first opened up the market, right, there weren't a lot of people going into the market because it wasn't as advantageous in terms of the amount of supply discount that you were getting. But what Alan and Luther didn't touch on was in actually 2007, a law was passed that AARP adamantly opposed that changed the way procurement was done so that the standard offer became artificially high. And that allowed competitive suppliers to come in and give these great discounts off of supply. So people actually flooded into the market to the point where over 60% of residential customers got into the market because it was a good deal if you call artificially inflating one rate to give you a slight discount off of it a good deal. We then worked very hard in 2011 to change that law, and Ellen kind of touched on that, where we worked to get an independent procurement manager created who actually would procure the energy for supply on standard offer in a much more efficient way, which, in addition to other things like natural gas and so forth, brought down the cost of standard offer. So it was that then changed the business practices immensely by these suppliers, because what they had to do is really get more aggressive to get the customers and go into things like tickler rates and teaser rates, because there really weren't a lot of great deals like there had been previous to that. So that kind of got us to where we were last year. And I think the problem even predates when the variable rate crisis began, because actually PURA at this time last year opened up a docket on third-party supplier behaviors, which were still going through Council Katz and our office and others are working on dealing with issues that were still coming up prior to the third-party supplier variable rate crisis in January. So what we've seen continually, even prior to this January, is a series of companies that are just simply pulling a lot of bait and switch on people. That's the biggest thing that we see. They try to lure you into the market with this promise of lower rates, many times not only making it not even making it clear that it's only on one portion of your bill, right? That supply generation portion. And as we heard from a previous caller, there's a lot of cost on the other side, your distribution portion of the bill. And then they get you in, and there is so much fine print that many times they don't even reveal, and the rates change. And they used a term called market conditions, and market conditions change the rates, so we had to pass all that along to the consumer. The problem is, for many, many years, they were making huge profits when they were simply just giving you a little discount off the standard offer, and they were making this great amount of money. And then when natural gas prices went up, which caused supply to go up in cost, they passed all that along to the consumers. And as Ellen pointed out, sometimes two and three and four times what the standard rate was. And so that was a big problem. And you know, it affects the elderly, it affects older people. But, you know, John, I got calls from morning to the time I leave work from people of all age groups, all professions. We had a gentleman by the name of Will Gouster who testified publicly. He is literally a rocket scientist. I mean, that was his profession. He got taken by a third-party electric supplier. So the problem is just widespread, and it probably will continue to go on to some degree in spite of the law that we just passed.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get, maybe, Ellen, because we haven't really fleshed out what this new law is that went into effect this year. Of course, the legislature and Governor Malloy took action after these price spikes in January. It's something that clearly needed to be addressed. What does the new law say? And then we'll ask you both, does it go far enough? Go ahead, Ellen.
Well, I think the biggest change it makes is the one I discussed earlier, which is you will see on your bill in a matter of months. It hasn't gone into effect yet because we have to redesign the bill, but you will see on your electric bill what the standard offer rate is, and then there will be a comparison on the first page of the bill to your rate. So you'll see right away what the rate's going to be for the next month. So you're not in this situation where you've already spent the money, you've already used the energy, and then you find out. You'll find out going forward how much it's going to be, and then you're going to have 72 hours. You'll be able to switch back to the standard offer within 72 hours if you don't like the rate you get. Or you'll be able to switch to another supplier within 30 days. The system we have now is you find out what your rate is, and then it can take up to 3 months, three billing cycles, to change suppliers. So you're not only on a high rate, but you can be stuck on that rate and even see that rate going up for up to 3 months before you can get out. That, I think, is the biggest change. We will also see, we saw a reduction in termination fees to $50. There's requiring that contracts have to have a fixed term of at least 3 months. So it makes it harder to do the sort of bait and switch, the problem that John talked about. And it also requires prior notification of rate hikes. It requires there's going to be a docket, which is a hearing before the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority on these marketing practices. And so there's some really good stuff in there.
John, does these new laws, as outlined by Ellen, do they go far enough?
Well, you know, actually, I don't think it does. I mean, and that's the stuff that Ellen mentioned is, yeah, it's good stuff. But, John, I got calls from members every single day, and adding a bunch more stuff to an electric bill, which is already overly complicated and confusing, as demonstrated by our earlier caller, is not going to solve the problem. What's going to solve the problem is if we actually put in some rules that change the behaviors and the practices of the unscrupulous third-party suppliers. Right? I mean, knowing that I've gotten ripped off isn't going to so much help an elderly person or a low-income person, you know, as opposed to actually saying to the suppliers that you know, you must give everybody a written contract, right? I mean, I get baffled by the fact that people will pick up their phone and a stranger will be on the other end and tell them that they're going to give them a great deal and they're going to save money, because that's usually what they do, and people will say, sign me up, sight unseen, with nothing in writing. and then they get ripped off. Now, that's a practice in my mind that shouldn't be able to be done. And I also don't think it's good enough to say, well, we put in a lot of transparency in the law, so therefore it's buyer beware. It shouldn't be buyer beware when somebody could be in a position to end up paying two or three times what they should be. They're on a fixed income, they're low income, and yet they're still held liable for that bill. So, you know, it's great to say, well, we have to have some personal responsibility, which we all agree.
Yeah.
But, and you know, unfortunately, with all of these suppliers, and by the way, you know, you mentioned how do we get so many suppliers. John, you and I can walk out of the studio today, go to the Secretary of State's office, spend a couple of minutes filing as a business, go down the PURA, pay a small fee, and sign up as a third-party supplier, and we'll be in business tomorrow.
Well,
that's how easy it is, by the way.
Ellen, I know you. I need to get just some phone calls here in a moment. Did you want to jump in on what John was just saying?
Well, yeah, I think John raises a lot of good points, but I think there's something people need to keep in mind, which is you should never feel pressured to switch to a competitive electric supplier. You can always stay on the standard offer. You know you're getting a reasonable price. And don't let anyone pressure you on the phone or at the door or any other means to switch, make you switch if you don't want to. There's absolutely nothing wrong. You, as a consumer, are not obligated to know all about the markets and whether you're getting a good deal.
Yeah, there's a lot in there that I'd like to get to, but I want to get to some phone calls of people who have some experience here. Nick is in Meriden. Hi, Nick.
Hello, John. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
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 I'm calling because, I have kind of a horror story. Someone from, I believe it was Heiko Energy, came to our door maybe 6 months to a year ago, and they were talking about, they framed it almost like there was a rebate that we were entitled to. And so they took our name, they took our address and all that, and they filled out a bunch of stuff. They gave us some forms, and it was, and said, you know, if you don't hear back in X amount of time, call this number. And, you know, it all just happened very quickly, and, you know, standing there looking at the papers. And so I call the number to find out what the heck is going on, and I find out that, you know, I'd been signed up to switch my electricity to these people. And, you know, if I had waited until the 2 weeks or whatever it was they wanted me to wait before calling, I would have been stuck with the plan for however long, unless I wanted to eat a termination fee.
Hmm. Nick, well, thank you for sharing the story. And Ellen, I guess I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on Nick's story, because I'm sure you've heard others like it.
Oh, yeah. We've heard many, many stories like that. And first of all, Nick, thank you for sharing your story. And let me assure you, that is not the way the system is supposed to work. What happened was a violation of numerous state laws right there. But the best bit of advice that I can give to people at this point is do not give out your account number, your CLMP or UI account number over the phone, in person, on the website, unless you've decided to switch, because that has led to a great number of slamming. Once some of these companies or some of the marketers, once they get your account number, will go ahead and switch you. And so that's something that people should refrain from doing.
So essentially, and this has happened in the phone industry for years and years and years, but this idea of slamming, this
yes.
is something where Nick doesn't have to have signed anything. Someone just gets the number and then signs them up.
Correct. May I add something else?
Please.
Anyone who has a complaint about an electric supplier can go to the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority and file a complaint either online or call them. And they will follow up and investigate the complaint. Now, wait times have been slow because they have been absolutely inundated. But fortunately, we are getting additional resources to get more people to more consumer representatives. So I encourage people not to just feel like you're stuck in your car with no one to complain to. There is an avenue for you to file a complaint.
So they could complain to your office, they could complain to PURA, they could complain to the Attorney General, I'm quite sure, but obviously wait times are going to be long because there's a lot of these. I mean, getting back to what John was just saying, this whole idea of all of these companies, the ease with which somebody could sign up to be a third-party supplier, even, honestly, Ellen, this whole idea of a standard offer, that there's a standard offer for the standard utilities that is non-competitive, meaning it's not going to change. It's not like CLMP can say, you know what, we're going to undercut these other guys and we're going to charge a little bit less and give you better service and we don't have to worry about anything. I mean, on its face, that seems, I don't know the word for it, just patently ridiculous that we would have a standard offer that's non-competitive and these others would be able to come in and make up their own rules and then you have to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we heard a lot of calls for re-regulation of this market, particularly on the consumer end. When we had public utility, the PURA held public meetings all over the state this winter. And then we attended all of them as well as the complaints. And yeah, the consumers are saying, what's in it for me in the long run? And I will tell you, we did a study as part of that that showed this is based on, we looked at the month of September for CLMP. So remember, this is before the polar vortex, which is getting blamed for a lot of these energy prices. And our study by our experts showed that 9 out of 10 residential customers in CLMP territory were paying more than the standard offer to the tune of over $10 million a month. And in UI's territory, again, looking at 1 month of data, we found 70% of consumers who are in the competitive market were paying more than the standard offer. So yes, there is a serious question as to how is this market benefiting residential consumers. There are good companies who can save you money, but you have to balance that against the risks of the companies who are taking advantage, particularly of folks who have limited language skills, who are seniors, who are low income. And, you know, we continue to hear stories of companies who go into buildings, low income buildings, where most of the residents do not speak English and seem to target them for high rates. And it's outrageous. It's outrageous.
And I think part of it is it's hard to know which companies are the good companies and which ones are the bad ones. John, I can hear you down the line. You wanted to jump in here. So I'll let you do that before we just get to another phone call. Go ahead.
I want to commend Ellen and Attorney General Jepson for the great work they did on the docket that's going on that actually revealed a lot of the unscrupulous practices that these suppliers are using. And, you know, Ellen brought up something that really is a kind of a sore spot with me in terms of how people portray, you know, the polar vortex was the cause for all the increase in rates. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, they give a simple explanation. It's called, market conditions, and yet we don't know what that is. In fact, I said to somebody high up in the energy department at the state last week, you know, why is it they get to say market conditions, just a plain old term with no definition, right? They don't have to explain to me what that is as the reason for the cost of energy going up. But when market conditions and the cost of energy goes down, they just simply hug the regulated standard rate and they don't pass any of that along to the ratepayer. So I think it's important that we know that that really should be defined. And that was something that wasn't defined. And the response I got back when I said, well, why can't we define what that is? They said, well, that would be re-regulation. Well, in fact, there was a reason we regulated a lot of electricity in the first place. It was because it's a necessity. People who are elderly, people who are infirmed, they need it. And it's not something that should be played like you're doing the penny stock market and have to on a daily basis check rates and check terms and conditions. And that's exactly what we've given the consumers in the state of Connecticut.
Well, I want to break in and just get to some phone calls here. John Erlinghauser is here. He's Advocacy Director for AARP Connecticut. Also, Ellen Katz, who is Connecticut's Consumer Counsel. We're taking your calls at 860-275-7266 and some tweets at Where We Live as we talk about third-party electric suppliers and some new laws meant to hopefully change this marketplace for the better for consumers. Nick is in Guilford. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I came from Texas. I lived there for several years and moved about 2 years ago. And Texas has a model that's similar to what Connecticut probably wants to get to. And I take a little exception to the comments that are being made about the problems with third party. The problem is the way it's implemented. In fact, in the Texas, the rate sheets that you get every year show precisely what rates will be paid and which contract to pick up in a competitive basis. And I think what the callers and commentators are missing right now is the fact that this competition drove the basic utility to drive their rates down as well. So it ended up helping everyone all the way around when fair competition entered. And just one more comment on that.
Yeah.
The concept that we had regulation in the past is not because we were protecting people. It's because there was no business model to prevent the single supplier from treating as a monopoly.
Well, and Nick, you raised the really – that's really what I was trying to get to before. And thank you very much for your phone call. It's that in the old market where we just had the utility and you paid whatever the utility was going to charge you, many people looked at that and said, Ellen, that's not right. So a competitive marketplace should be a competitive marketplace. Nick says the Texas model actually works. Do you have any idea about the Texas model?
I do, actually. I do have some knowledge of the Texas model. In fact, the former Texas Consumer Council is a good friend of mine. And yeah, actually, we took some of the ideas from the Texas model for this, for the changes that we have made this year. And in fact, when you go on, and thank you, Nick, it's a good point. You need to be an educated consumer in order to make a good decision. And so when you go on, actually starting on September 15th, our peerage came out with a decision on Friday that requires each company to show historical data. In other words, what did they charge over the last 12 months? So if you want to go in and compare, you can see that this company beat the standard offer four out of the last 12 months but didn't on the other the remaining number. So, yeah, there's a lot of that we're learning from our other states on this. And I'm not advocating for or against the market. I just think if we're going to have the market, that's to the wisdom of the legislature to decide. But if we're going to have this market, we got to make sure that it works. And we have had great partners this year in AARP, in the legislature, in the governor's office, in many different constituencies who came together to recognize we really needed to make some serious changes to protect consumers. So I think folks should take some comfort in that there's a lot of people up in Hartford working to try to make this better, and that's why we need to hear from you.
There's just a few minutes left here, and I just have to ask a couple quick questions here. A few tweets from John. I don't know if they're the same Johns or different Johns. One has to do with some of the alternative energy providers combine a pyramidish scheme plus an energy supplier, right. Referrals and free service if a certain number of people sign up. John, can you tell us about this at all? Because this is something we've heard a little bit about here. You get a service deal if you help to sign up some friends.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the old adage. If a deal sounds too good to be true, it is. And they set up, there's several companies that set up these pyramid-type schemes that basically pay you if you recruit so many customers, and obviously you have to recruit them, and they sign up to be with that third-party supplier, and then you get paid for every customer that you sign up. So maybe one person might save a little bit of money, but then what most of these other customers found is that they were in these variable rate contracts. You know, John, I just want to say something about Texas, because Texas is not a completely deregulated market. It's half and half. And the fact of the matter is, in the parts of Texas that are deregulated and have this third-party supply market, rates are substantially higher than in the portions of Texas that have the old traditional completely regulated vertically regulated market. So to say that Texas is the model, if you talk to anybody in the deregulated portion of Texas, they would tell you that was absolutely ludicrous. Now, with regards to supply, Ellen is absolutely right. We've taken good things from other states, and you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't have a market because some people want to pay more for green energy, but we should put things in that will actually curb the abusive practices of the suppliers, in addition to the great transparency that Ellen and Attorney General and others put into the law. So I just wanted to make that very important. And
John, I apologize just because we've got to go now because we have to get on to our next segment. But this has been fascinating, and I have a feeling we should probably bring you both back in once again and talk more about this. John Erlinghauser is Advocacy Director for AARP Connecticut. John, thank you very much.
John, thanks for doing this. It was very important.
And Ellen Katz, Connecticut's Consumer Counsel, just very quickly, another tweet from John that says, so all they need is our account number to switch us? Why is that allowed? He writes, you're saying it's not allowed.
It's not allowed. It's slamming. It's illegal. And we're trying to get a handle on it. But don't give it out.
Ellen Katz, Connecticut's Consumer Counsel, thank you very much. A lot more to talk about. I appreciate you coming in. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the company Herbalife and some of its inroads into the Latino community here in Connecticut. That's coming up next, Where We Live. The This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, after spending years and sometimes decades behind bars, inmates can leave prison with little direction moving forward. They face difficulties obtaining employment, education, and housing. We're going to take a closer look tomorrow at what happens to people when they get out of prison and they have to get back into society. That's our conversation tomorrow on Where We Live. I hope you can join us. Today, we're considering a few consumer issues. We've been talking about electric rates, how government has had to step in to help protect consumers, including the elderly and the non-English speaking. Next, we're going to turn to another consumer issue, one that has a big impact in the Latino community, the ongoing popularity of Herbalife, the multi-level marketing company that's made billions selling nutrition supplements, weight loss products, and personal care items. They have been praised as an innovative business model, and they have been pilloried as a pyramid scheme. Here to talk a bit more about it is Mary Sanders, Executive Director of the Spanish-speaking Center of New Britain. Mary, welcome to our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Maybe you can explain from your standpoint what Herbalife is and how it works.
Well, Herbalife sells a lot of nutritional supplements, and how it works. Are you talking about how the business works?
I'm talking about how the business works and how it impacts what you're working on here.
Well, our agency is a multi-service nonprofit agency that's 50 years old, has been serving New Britain. And we do advocacy around different issues that affect our community in addition to providing social services such as a food pantry, English classes, GED classes. So we're all about helping families get back on their feet and become self-sufficient and less dependent on services and government assistance. When it came to our attention, what was going on with the Herbalife, we had known about it, and we had some of our participants come in trying to start different business ventures, and we knew a little bit about the company. But it came to our attention a few months ago that a lot of people were losing money big time on this. There are people working on this issue across the nation, and there are some people working on it in Connecticut, and they reached out to us to get us to join with their efforts to inform the public and try to have people come forward who felt they had been taken advantage of by the company. From what we understand and what we've seen and the research we've done, the people who are being enticed to come into this business have to lay out a lot of money to become distributors with the promise that they're going to make money. It's a get-rich-quick thing. And although we warn people, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it most likely is. People are forking over that cash. They're borrowing money, hitting up their family members, and becoming distributors thinking that they're going to be very successful selling this product. Now, the product may or may not be good, and they may be able to make some minimal sales. But what we're seeing is that it doesn't seem like the company is that interested in really making those frontline sales. What they're interested in is recruiting new members. There are close to 4,000 distributors in Connecticut. The majority of them are Latinos, and a lot of them really can't afford to be getting into these types of business ventures, and they're losing money big time.
How much money are people paying to get into this business?
If they want to become distributors and have a team working for them, they have to outlay $3,000 cash.
$3,000 cash with no understanding about whether or not they'll actually make that $3,000 back or any money on top of it.
Right, right. And so a lot of people are encouraged to open up these little health clubs, and they're used as a recruiting tool. People come in, they get their shake, they do a little exercise, but it's really a recruitment site.
I just want to get to the phones here because Marco Gonzalez is calling us up. He's a senior director for corporate communications for Herbalife. Marco, thank you for calling our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Mary Sanders and a number of other advocates around the country are taking a close look at the business model here. They say that people, especially Spanish-speaking people in urban areas, are being conned into spending an awful lot of money and not able to make that money back. Can you just explain a little bit about the business practice and how that's allowed to happen?
Absolutely. You know, first and foremost, we take these allegations very seriously. One complaint is one too many, and it's unacceptable. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation being spread by a multi-billionaire. He's a hedge fund manager. He placed a bet against our company in December of 2012 and has gathered a lot of Latino advocate groups and consultants to attack us and attack our business with the Latino community. As a Latino, I take great offense to that because this is a company that has supported economic empowerment in communities where opportunities are not available. You know, Mrs. Sanders said that, you know, people invest are expected to invest $3,000. That's completely false. Our membership is $59.95 to become an Herbalife member. And then, you know, if you choose to sell the product, that's great. 70% of our members.
She said that to become a distributor and to have people working with you and for you, it costs $3,000. Is that number right?
That's not true.
Well, what's the number? What's the number? I just want to understand.
$59.95 to become an Herbalife member.
And if you want to become a distributor and have people work for you, what's the number beyond that, beyond the $59.95? Are there different rates that you would pay on up the scale?
No. The entry membership to become a distributor at Herbalife is $59.95.
So, Mary Sanders, I'm wondering if you can you just flesh that out for us a little bit? When you say that the number is one thing and Herbalife says it's another thing, maybe you can just explain, Mary.
Well, we do have information saying that if a person wants a basic membership, they can pay between $57 and $89. That's just for their startup kit. But in order for them to advance quickly and receive commissions, they have to invest in a lot of product and recruit a team to work under them. And we've been told by different people that that's up to $3,000.
So does that number sound about right, Marco?
The operative word here is quick. And she said earlier that, you know, people are promised to get rich quick. That is completely unfounded. If you want to become a distributor and have a customer base, you must work hard. You must invest time and energy to build your clientele. Our nutrition clubs, which she mentioned, that's what they do. We promote daily consumption, and that's how our distributors build their client base. They have customers. This doesn't happen overnight. You can't become a distributor with an organization without having worked the business for a while.
We've read numbers that say that some 88% of distributors make $0 in payments from Herbalife. Is that about right?
No, that's false. Like I was saying earlier, 74% of our members become members not to sell our product. That's completely false. Therefore, they never had the intention of making any money. These people are there to buy the product at a discount. Think of a Costco membership. I'm a Costco member. I pay my membership, my yearly membership, but when I walk out of that store, I'm not selling the product. It's for personal consumption.
So Mary, let's just take this apart here in just the last couple of minutes we have here, because what Herbalife is saying is one thing. These are people who want to get into this because they want to use the product themselves. And what you're talking about is people who are coming to you saying, we've been told we can make money doing this, and we're outlaying money that we don't exactly have. Can you just talk this through a little bit about how you deal with these complaints on your end?
Well, there may be people that join. I sold Avon in the past. I was my best customer. I understand that part of it, people joining something to get the discount. And if they pay the $59 or $79, whatever, just to be able to get a discount on their product, that's one thing. But when they hear constantly that they can make big money if they supervise teams of people working under them, and that in order for them to do that, they need to invest in larger amounts of product. We've had many people coming to us saying they have a garage full of Herbalife product. We have people coming in desperate to sell to our staff and our students, and they want to come in and make presentations. You know, we're not allowed to do that. We don't allow any types of solicitation, you know, of one kind or another. But I've seen a lot of people that had really hoped to build a business, and unless they have numerous people working below them and below them in different tiers, they're really not able to turn a profit.
I'd like to ask in just the last 30 seconds or so that we have you taken any of these complaints to the Attorney General's office, Mary, or perhaps to consumer protection departments?
We've only gotten involved in this recently, and we are, you know, distributing information. And if people want to file a complaint, we will help them do that. It's not gotten to that point yet. We're right now just, you know, trying to gather information and see how widespread this is.
I think it's fair to say that this is another conversation like the one we had earlier today that might be worth a little bit more review in the future. I want to thank you for coming in. Mary Sanders is Executive Director of the Spanish-Speaking Center of New Britain. Thank you, Mary.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you also to Marco Gonzalez, who is from Herbalife, who called into our program. You can continue this conversation online, WNPR.org. Our program is produced by Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives. The executive producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankosky, and this is Where We Live.